welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levionier, with you for an hour of crime featuring one of the most famous voices in crime drama on the air and on TV, Jack Webb. A little bit later, we'll hear Dragnet in its heyday from 1955, but right now, the precursor to what would be one of the most famous police dramas on radio, it's the third episode of Pat Novak for Hire, starring Jack Webb. Along with Raymond Burr, Parley Bear, and Loreen Tuttle, this is the third program in the ABC series from April 2nd, 1949.
Pat Novak, for Hire.
Sure, I'm Pat Novak, for hire. That's what the sign out in front of my office says. Pat Novak, for hire. It's about the only way to say it. Oh, you can dress it up and tell how many shopping days there are till Christmas. But if you got yourself in the market, you can't waste time talking. You gotta be as brief as a pauper's will. Because down on the waterfront in San Francisco, everybody wants a piece of the cake. And the only easy buck is the one you just spent. Oh, it's a good life. If you work real hard and study a little on the side, you gotta trade by the time you get to prison. I rent boats and do a few other odd jobs you can't afford to pick it on. It works out all right if you put your tongue in hock. Because down here, you shouldn't talk. It's like installing a set of drums in a belfry. You make some noise, but it's never the right kind. I found that out a few days ago. Must have been Tuesday or Wednesday night anyway. I was sitting in the office reading Time magazine when the door opened. I looked up and had to keep right on going because the guy was so tall he'd have to bend over to see through a transom. And he had a voice deep enough to ret out as a bassoon.
Good evening, Mr. Novak.
I'll take your word for it.
You have a small office.
I'm small time. What's on your mind?
My name is Leahy. I want to hire you.
Yeah. Sit down. Are you cold?
Yeah.
That overcoat around your neck, you're either cold or a priest.
Oh. I'm a priest, Mr. Novak.
I'm sorry, Father. You got a slow brogue. What do you need?
A few hours of your time. I want you to help a man escape from prison.
Father, you'll never get along with a bishop.
Mr. Novak, in a curious way, this is an errand of mercy.
Well, this isn't my year for mercy. I'm sorry, Father. Maybe you don't like to hear it that way, but if I got the right fee, it wouldn't be mercy anymore.
When I say it's an errand of mercy, that's what it is. Sometime tonight, a man is going to break out of Alcatraz. If he's allowed to get into town, he may kill somebody.
You want me to stop him?
That's right. And if he doesn't kill anybody, he can still be shot down by the police.
Well, that's the percentage, Father. If he comes off that rock, he knows that. Stop worrying about him.
If you could bring him to me, I know I can talk him into going back.
Tell headquarters they'll do the same thing.
If I did that, I'd break a promise. This is the only thing I can do. Will you help me?
Yeah, I suppose. How do I pick him up? Tread water in the bay till he comes by?
He's due in at Pier 19 sometime tonight. When he comes ashore, bring him to me. I'll be waiting at the ferry building.
Yeah, well, suppose he doesn't want to come. Suppose he wants to party. How am I going to get him there?
I don't ask you how to say the beads. If you're any good, you'll get him there.
But you don't want him in sections.
I want him all at once, Mr. Novak. I wouldn't ask you this if it weren't important. But I gotta help him. He's one of my boys.
Yeah, sure. What's his name?
Joe Feldman.
Feldman?
Yeah. If I don't worry about the spelling, you don't have to either. He's one of my boys.
Slow down. Nobody's pushing your father.
I don't know when he's due, but I'll be at the ferry building from 8 o'clock on.
Yeah. I only got one worry.
Huh?
Is there really a guy named Father Leahy?
I suppose you'll have to take a chance on that.
Yeah, well, it's a big chance. You come in here with a story anybody can see through like a screen door, and I'm supposed to buy it. You could dig up a collar. What happens if you're a fake?
Just try to guess right.
Suppose I don't.
Then you're in the same spot Pontius Pilate was. Good night, Mr. Novak.
Well, whoever Joe Feldman was, he had a good friend. Because when Father Leahy walked out of there, I knew he was all right. Well, I made a couple of phone calls, and then I closed shop and went down to the end of Pier 19 to wait. The bay looked as dark as a bruised crow. The fog was beginning to drift in over near the piers. By 9 o'clock, you couldn't see a thing. You felt like a guy trying to shave in a bathroom full of steam. I was about 30 feet from the end of the pier when a small boat pulled in and let somebody out. I was sure it was my boy, so I moved behind a shed and waited. The boat pulled away, and the guy started down the dock. I waited until he moved past me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You ought to be glad. How's the rock?
Huh? You lonely, mister?
What do you care?
If you are, buy a beer and talk to the bartender. I'm busy.
All right, you're tough, Feldman. Let's go now.
You got dates for us?
You're going to see Father Leahy. Come on.
Well, are you doubling for Gabriel? Leave me alone, mister. I don't want to go.
Now, look, Junior, if we draw straws, you're going to get the short one.
Is that supposed to be a gun in your pocket?
Well, you get a chance to find out.
That's what I'm going to do, because I have one, too. If it starts to hurt your stomach, back down. Now, where's yours, Mr. Timmett? Bad night for bluffing, so goodbye.
Yeah, come here.
Go easy, fella. It's a big one.
Well, you can let go easy then. Come on, drop it.
Drop it in the water.
Let go. Now, you want to start again?
No. All right, I'll see you, man, Leahy. I gotta make a stop first.
Make it after.
It'll take 5 minutes. Look, mister, if you want to do it the easy way, let me make the stop. You go with me.
All right, 5 minutes, and then you see Father Leahy.
Suit yourself. I doubt if I'll make heaven, but if you want to run interference, it's all right with me. If you need the credits, you need the credits.
Joe Feldman wasn't very friendly. He sat over in the corner of the cab, and he didn't say a thing. He just kept looking at me and waiting, like a guy feeding arsenic to a rich aunt. A few minutes later, the cab pulled up in front of a hotel on Geary Street, and we walked in. One look at that lobby, and you got the idea. The place was about as cozy as an abandoned mine shaft. Over by the wall, there was an old mohair couch, and the legs on it were so warped, pretty soon it was going to look like period furniture. There were a few chairs, and over by the stairs, a faded calendar of a girl in tights holding a jar of mayonnaise and winking, whatever that meant. And there was a broken clock over the desk. But you knew it was all right, because nobody there cared about keeping track of time. It was something you got rid of in a hurry, like a bent quarter. Well, we went up to the second floor. We walked down a long hall that smelled like an anteroom to a sewer. When Feldman knocked on the door, she opened it right away. The room was full of taboo. She stood leaning there for a minute, a sort of a girl who moves when she stands still. She had blonde hair. She was kind of pretty, except you could see somebody had used her badly, like a dictionary in a stupid family. Feldman seemed to know her.
Hello, Ann.
Well, the harvest hands arrive all at once.
Yeah.
Good for the crops, but tough on a woman. Come in. Who's your friend?
A missionary, I guess. He grabbed me down by the docks.
Does he talk or just stand there looking healthy?
He growls a little.
Do you really growl?
Come on, hurry up, lady. Your friend's got a date.
I'll bet you bite instead. Don't worry about him. He can go over in a corner and play fifth wheel.
Now, look, he's got 5 minutes. Use him quick.
Yes?
Came up with a message, Ann. The time's been changed. Stay around till 10 o'clock.
All right.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's all. You want the other 4 minutes?
Let's go.
All right. Open the door.
Yeah.
You didn't open it fast enough.
When Feldman hit me, I wobbled for a minute and went down like the price of winter wheat. Father Leahy had any loose prayers lying around. Now was the time to crate them up and ship them over, because I wasn't going to stay awake long enough to test the varnish. I rolled on the floor a couple of times, and then I took a rain check on the next couple of hours. When I woke up, it was like buying a new Nash and then finding out you can't drive. Joe Feldman was lying next to me with his throat cut like a pound of rib roast. His head was over to one side, and his body was twisted over the other way as if he couldn't make up his mind which direction to die in. I got up and rolled him on his back. He was grinning like a Pullman porter at the end of the line, and his mouth was half open as if he expected you to drop in a suggestion on your way by. I noticed right then how thin and small he was, about as fat as a shadow and tall enough to scrape his head on a lampshade. Well, there wasn't anything I could do but wish him luck. So I called the check stand at the ferry building and had them page Father Leahy. About 2 minutes later, he answered.
Hello, Father Leahy?
This is Novak, Father.
Yes?
Call in the outfield. Your boy's dead.
I see. What happened?
Somebody didn't like him lots. I wasn't around for the main event.
Where are you, on the pier?
No, I'm in some cave up on Geary Street. He wanted to come by here first. Father, who's Ann?
I don't know.
Has Feldman got a girlfriend?
He's got 2 sisters, I think. One of them's named Ann.
A tall blonde with lots of speed?
That's your definition, but it'll probably do.
Now, she was around for a while, in case you ever want to check.
What are you going to do?
Get on the back stairs and pretend I never heard of Joe Feldman.
I'm sorry, Mr. Novak. I'm sorry it worked out that way.
So am I, Father. If you liked him, I'm sorry. He may have been a nice little guy.
Huh?
Oh, I could do without him, but if you like it, I'll say he was a good little guy.
How little?
I don't know. We could start a picket fence with him. Why?
Because you've got the wrong man, Mr. Novak.
Huh?
If he's under 6 feet, you've got the wrong man. Whoever you've got up there isn't Joe Feldman.
Well, he's happy about it now, Father.
Whoever he is, I'm sorry.
It's the percentage.
Why the percentage? It isn't Joe Feldman. Why?
That's the waterfront, Father. If your name's Joe Nobody, you still can't do better than 8 to 5.
At least Joe Feldman was smart. If you're going to get your throat cut, it's a good time to send in a substitute. As soon as Father Leahy hung up, I knew hanging around that hotel was going to be a waste of time, like sending mash notes to a bearded lady. If I couldn't prove the guy was alive, they were going to charge extra down at the desk. And if Hellman down at Homicide ever found out I brought the guy up here, I'd have about as much chance as a bottle of scotch at a cocktail party. So I picked up my hat and started for the door. I looked at him once more, but he wasn't going to say goodbye, so I started out.
Boo. Oh.
Hello, Hellman.
You expecting me, Novak?
No, I'd have rolled him first.
Yeah. Invite me in.
Crash the party, Hellman. You'll be more at home.
All right. He sure looks lazy. Who is he?
He's supposed to be Joe Feldman.
But Feldman let him do the hard work. They must be good friends.
You better check. I don't know the guy.
Yeah, help me roll him over.
Okay. There. Here, here's his wallet.
You let me have it.
You're going to break your fingernail.
Give it here.
All right.
Yeah. No money in here.
You going to drop the case?
Here's his card, Mike Greeley. Didn't he like you either?
You're wearing out the rug, Hellman. I don't know the guy.
You brought him up. I checked at the desk.
Well, check on who left then. I brought him up here on a phony leave.
Why?
Because I was hired to tow him around. He liked the room, so we dropped by.
And he cut himself shaving?
I wasn't around. There was a girl here for the handshakes.
Oh. What kind of girl?
I don't know, Hellman. How many kinds are there? Her name was Ann. She had a fast pulse. That's all I know.
You must know more than that. If you don't, you'll never get a lawyer.
I won't need one.
You'll save money at least, because you got a real hole this time, Novak. We get a phone tip and find you in the murder room.
You got half a story, Hellman.
I know, but I'll get the other half. Until then, you're under technical arrest. It's practically the real thing.
You got a technical head, Hellman. I wouldn't tip myself off.
Somebody else would. Walk around, Novak, and tire yourself out. Because you'll wind up sitting down. In the meantime, I'll have you tailed.
Your men couldn't follow a moose through a revolving door. Now look, Hellman, I'm gonna double back. This guy's a phony lead. I was supposed to meet a guy named Joe Feldman, but he never showed up.
He didn't?
No.
I got a dead copper to prove he did. Your boy, Joe Feldman, killed a sergeant named Grubb at the Gold Rush Club a half hour ago. You better start that walk, Novak.
Well, there are two kind of raps you can't ever beat. Cheating a woman with kids and killing a copper. So I knew Joe Feldman could put in for reservations right away. And I knew Hellman would stay with him like a February cold. He'd stay with the whole thing, and I'd have a real tough time explaining. I couldn't explain it to myself. What about the message up in that room? Why did the little guy tell Ann to stay until 10 o'clock? Why did he get off at Pier 19 instead of Joe Feldman? Once he got there, what was Feldman doing at the Gold Rush Club, and why did they spot him so fast? Well, it pointed to one thing, a police tip-off, but that's as far as I could go. On the way down, I stopped at the desk, and I asked the clerk to see the register. He pushed it over toward me. It was a dirty brown thing that looked like an old tortilla somebody had left behind. It didn't do any good. The registration was a phony. Well, I had to do something in a hurry, so I looked up the only honest guy I know, an ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. He's a good man, and he used to be a smart one, too. And still, he started chasing a jigger of beer with a glass of whiskey. I finally found him in the Pied Piper room arguing with somebody about the words to Annie Laurie.
Ah, Patsy, a drink for Mr. Novak. Something cheap but impressive.
Oh, stop it, will you, Jocko? Are you going to be drunk all your life?
Yes, it's only a matter of willpower, Patsy. I'm probably the only man in the world who intends to carry a hangover into eternity.
Well, stop long enough to give me a hand, will you? I'm in trouble.
Of course you're in trouble. You'll always be in trouble because you can't recognize it, Patsy.
You're fuzzy, Jocko.
You have the social outlook of a bull with a hot foot, and there's no hope for you because if from time to time a moral feeling does sweep over you, you mistake it for influenza and go to bed.
All right, all right.
Oh, you try hard enough. You go through the motions, Patsy, but you never get anywhere. You go stumbling through life doing a tight wire act on a rubber band. You're always in the middle.
Will you listen to me?
It's because there's no variety in your life. You won't allow it. You're a broken-down banjo, not a very good instrument to begin with. And to make matters worse, you allow everybody to come along and pluck the same string.
All right. Are you all through now, Jocko?
Yes. You sound angry. I think you have a bad disposition, too. What kind of trouble?
Well, I tried to help some guy out of prison tonight.
You got drunk and thought you were the parole board?
No, I did it for a good guy, a priest named Leahy.
Yes?
The guy was already out, and Father Leahy was trying to hurt him back without getting shot, but this guy Feldman didn't want to play.
Another drink will clear this up for me?
I picked up the wrong guy. I took him to a Geary Street hotel.
I napped a while and they cut him up like a piece of parsley.
Sounds like a gruesome hotel.
The dead guy's name is Mike Greeley. I don't even know who he is.
Well, this is no time to start building a friendship anyway. Who is in the room?
Some girl. She may be Feldman's sister.
Would she kill a man?
Well, if she did, he'd be crushed to death. No, I'm sure somebody else came in that room.
You better talk to Feldman.
Well, he's a hard man to reach. A sergeant almost made it tonight. Feldman shot his way out of the Gold Rush Club.
That's one way to get out of a nightclub.
Well, Hellman steamed up, so you gotta help me, Jocko.
You'd better look up Father Leahy. You'll probably be electrocuted, and if you are, he may have some drag.
I want you to go down to the Chronicle Morgue and pull the clips on Joe Feldman, will you? Get everything you can, and then hit the horse parlors. Find out what they know about him, huh?
Maybe he's a heavy drinker. I'll check the bars.
Jocko, wake up and get down there. If I don't pace Hellman on this thing, I'll be a dead pigeon. What am I supposed to do?
I don't know. You might start cooing. Good night, lover.
Well, as soon as I left Jocko, I went down to the Gold Rush Club on O'Farrell Street. It was a little nightclub where they charge 80 cents for a drink of whiskey that'd kill a redwood. The floor show was just as bad, and the headliner was an Oriental dancer whose only talent was a zipper. I sat at the bar, and I tried to pry some talk loose, but they liked the boss. I finally got a hold of a fat waitress who should have been wearing a harness instead of slacks. She told me a little. The owner was a guy named Charlie Giffen, and he used to make book with Joe Feldman. She told me that Joe's sister worked at the Gold Rush Club for a while, but she got sick a few months ago and quit. I asked the girl if tonight's shooting was a police plant. She didn't know, but she said that Feldman had been in to see Giffen tonight, and on his way out, he ran into trouble. I gave her $5, and she looked hurt as if somebody had given her a plow for Christmas. She showed me where Giffen's office was, and I walked back there. Giffen wasn't there, but the taboo was.
Do you have the right door, Mr. Novak?
You seem to be in all of them.
Do you mind if I lean in the doorway?
No, but I'll bet you need shoulder pads by this time. Where's Charlie Giffen?
Why?
I want to ask him about Joe Feldman.
Ask me. I'm his sister.
I'll ask you about Mike Greeley. Who killed him?
I don't know. Is he dead?
Yeah, he couldn't stand the bleeding.
He was all right when I left.
What were you doing up there?
Waiting for Joe. My sister and I were going to meet him up there. Relax, Mr. Novak. Relax for me.
No, when people relax for you, they do it on the floor. I was out long enough for homicide to catch up. They want me for Mike Greeley, but I'm going to send him you or Joe.
You're forgetting my sister Norma.
Should I?
For most things, yes. But she was up in that room tonight after me.
I'll ask her.
Ask her about the money, too.
Then you're out in front of me on that.
You see me better that way. Joe had a lot of money on him tonight. With the police out, he wouldn't carry it with him. By now, the money's gone, so's Norma.
Oh.
Do you know where it is?
No.
Well, you growl and you bite and you lie. You must have a full day. Sit down, relax.
I want to see Giffen.
He won't be back tonight. Now lean back. That's it, Patsy.
You really want that money.
I can split a motive.
Can you split it 90-10? If you can't, you better get your breath back.
I won't need it. I don't want to talk anymore. Come here and make me stop. Over close.
If I get any closer, I'll be on the other side of you.
Yes. Patsy. You ought to get time and a half, darling.
Hello, Ann. Thought you were coming in to curl up with a good book.
Mr. Novak came by full of questions. This is Charlie Giffen, Patsy.
I got some questions for you, too, Giffen.
Well, ask him down the bore of this gun. Over by the desk, Novak.
Did you lose that knife, Giffen?
By the desk. That's it. Where's the money, Novak?
I gave her the last report.
Where's the money? Joe gave it to somebody.
Try the Red Cross, mister.
You got a tender face, Novak. Now get out of this club before I slap on a cover charge.
I was getting sick of tonight. In 3 hours, I'd seen more service than a mixmaster in a cooking school. When I left the Gold Rush Club, I dropped by headquarters. Hellman had nothing to show but his badge. They had a dragnet around the city for Joe Feldman, and they'd lined up the record on the dead guy in the hotel. He'd been a friend of Joe's before his trip to Alcatraz. There wasn't much I could do. If homicide couldn't find Joe, I couldn't find him. So I looked up Norma Feldman in the phone book. She had an apartment out on the avenues, but when I called, there was no answer, so I tagged by my apartment to see if Jocko had left a message. When I opened the door, Norma was there, and she had a gun to keep her company.
Come in, Mr. Novak.
Yeah?
I came up here to kill you.
If you're Norma, the rest of the family's ahead of you.
What's happened to my brother?
I don't know.
Please, what's happened to him, Mr. Novak?
Well, if he killed a cop, he's hiding out.
I know he didn't mean to do that, Mr. Novak. Joe's not that way. Somebody told the police he was going to be there. That's why I came up here to see you.
Oh, put down the gun, huh? You can't shoot through the tears.
Mr. Novak, if you know where he is, tell me. Make him give himself up. Make him stop hiding like a small, frightened animal.
You look big to that copper.
Please. Please find him.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Jocko.
Yeah.
You sound ruffled.
Joe Feldman's sister just walked in to kill me.
Don't argue. It's the best offer you've had.
What'd you find out?
Feldman has two sisters.
I know. They both go to pieces.
The Gold Rush Club is owned by Charlie Giffin. He owed Joe Feldman $2,000, and the horse people say Joe collected it tonight.
Well, that fits in, Jocko. Everybody in town's after that dough.
They'll have to look some more.
Hmm?
I'm out on Arguello Boulevard. Homicide just fished Joe Feldman out of the gutter.
If Homicide finished second, he was a lucky guy. He didn't have the dough on him?
No.
Well, he stashed it somewhere.
Then he left it with a woman.
Yeah?
Because he's got a woman's compact in his pocket. You better hit the sister's place.
How do we know he got it there?
A woman's compact? If he didn't get it there, Alcatraz is getting too social.
Well, the minute Jocko hung up, things began to fall into place. But I knew the last piece was going to pinch somebody hard. If the Feldman blood was going to turn bad, Father Leahy was a good man to send in, so I called him. He was out, but I left word for him to get out to Norma Feldman's apartment. Norma and I left, and on the way, we picked up Hellman. When we got out to her place and started up the stairs, we could hear people moving above. There was no point in trying to keep quiet, because Hellman was creeping up the stairs like a stallion with a broken leg. Yeah, if you got a bomb, touch it off too, huh? Well, open it, Hellman.
Hello, Novak.
Did you find the dough, Giffin?
You mean my stolen dough? Yeah. Come on, Ann.
No, you and Ann better wait. This is Hellman from Homicide.
We're leaving. You better move, Novak.
Not until you settle a murder rap. Can you pay it off that fast?
I can do it on the way to the door.
Oh, wait a minute. Point the gun at Hellman. He's official.
I can tag you both, so move away. You too, Norma. Ann and I are leaving.
Look, Giffin, Homicide gobbles up nightclub big shots like you.
You're nothing to me, copper. Move away.
You got the hammer. Use it and come on through.
All right, I will, copper.
Need a refill, Giffin.
That's right, darling. Hand him your gun.
Ann, you couldn't have done that. You couldn't have taken him out.
All right, so they fell out. You better take him for murder, Hellman.
You little bum. That leaves you all the money.
I can spend it, darling.
Well, you better do it fast, then.
Grab him, Hellman.
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, you can book him for both murders. My Greeley and my brother. I'll testify and I'll ride there in a cab on your dough, Giffin.
Yeah. Are you going to pose or take me, Hellman?
If you're anxious.
Sorry about you, Norma. You get nothing out of this, but that's better than I got. Goodbye, Ann. Lots of luck.
Thank you, darling.
You know what kind. I hope you're rot. Come on, Hellman.
I'm ashamed of you, Ann.
Leave me alone, Norma.
I'm ashamed of you, Ann. What you did to Joe, I'm ashamed of you.
Leave me alone, Norma. I'm sick, you know that. I didn't know how it was going to work out.
Poor Joe was trying to help you when you got greedy. He was trying to help you. That's the only reason he came out, and you let this happen.
I told you I didn't know how it was going to end. I thought they'd get him and take him back again.
There's no good in you, Ann. They couldn't find good in you anywhere. You let that happen to Joe. You stood by and watched him walk into something like that.
All right, I stood by. What can we do about it now except weep, and that won't help him.
But hating you will. That'll help Joe a little. I'm here at least to hate you for the short time left.
Please, Norma.
Giffin told you to spend it fast. Well, you better spend it fast. Ask him at the hospital if that isn't so.
What do you mean?
Ask him out there what you've got. They told him. You ask him what you've got. Ask him what's tearing you to pieces. Ask him. They'll tell you. They'll tell you you've got cancer.
Norma, please.
They'll tell you cancer. Ask him. They'll tell you you're full of it. Now spend your money. Spend your money and see that it lasts as long as you do.
Goodbye, girls.
Hello, Mr. Novak.
Did you miss much, Father?
No.
Feldman luck is running kind of bad tonight.
It does for some people, I guess. All they get is unhappiness. They wear it the same way you'd wear a sports coat, only they never seem to get a new one. I'm sorry about tonight, Mr. Novak. I'm sorry it's not a smoother world.
Yeah. But if it were, you'd be out of a job, Father. See you later. If you get a bad first break, you never run the table. That's what happened to Joe Feldman. Charlie Giffen owed him dough and wouldn't pay up. But Joe didn't care until Norma showed up and told him how sick Ann was, so he decided to collect from Giffen and divide the dough between the girls. Father Leahy couldn't stop him. All he could do was try and make it work out. Joe was going to get the dough and meet the girls in that hotel room, but he changed his timetable and sent Mike Greeley up to tell the girls. Giffen showed up there and figured that Mike had tumbled to a double cross, so he killed him. Ann engineered the double cross, but she didn't mean to go that far. She wanted all the dough and tipped off Giffen. He was supposed to turn the dough over to her and then have the police pick up Joe, but Joe got there early. He took the dough away from Giffen and shot the copper on the way out. Giffen followed Joe and killed him out in Arguello, but the dough was gone. He finally tumbled to Norma's place, and that's how her apartment filled up so fast. Well, Hellman asked only one question. What did I get out of all this? Nothing. Father Leahy offered me $50, but I didn't want it. Jocko was with me, and he offered to give it to charity. I guess he did, because where Jocko spent it, the drinks aren't worth money.
Pat Novak for Hire was previously released by ABC, the American Broadcasting Company, for listeners in the United States, and rebroadcast for our men and women overseas.
Pat Novak for Hire on Tuned to Yesterday from April 2nd, 1949 on ABC. When it first hit the air in 1946-1947, it was produced out of KGO in San Francisco and was heard on the West Coast Network only. And after the show was revived in 1949, part of the run we just heard, the entire country heard the ABC program, making it a little bit easier for Jack Webb to pitch and execute his Dragnet show. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now an episode of Dragnet, featuring Jack Webb and Ben Alexander from February 8, 1955. The story, The Big Gap.
Dragnet. Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to Bunko Fugitive Detail. A pawnbroker tells you he suspects a swindle. He isn't sure. Your job? Check it out.
The documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, May 18th. It was cool in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of Bunko Fugitive Detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. I was on my way into the office, and it was 7:55 a.m. when I got to room 38. Bunko Fugitive.
Never know. Hi, Joe.
Morning.
You remember Fred Alpin?
Oh, sure. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Hold my own, Sergeant.
Well, what's new?
I'm not sure. Maybe just wasting my time. Yours, too.
Fred thinks he stumbled onto a con game, Joe.
All right.
No, look that way to me, anyhow.
Yeah. Well, what's the sting?
Well, I was just telling Smith here.
Yeah.
A fella came in last night, a little guy. He was kind of timid. Probably never been to pawn shop before. At least he wasn't a steady. You know, I can spot them straight off.
Yeah.
Wanted to pawn a ring. Got a big green stone. Fancy setting. All gimmicked up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Man's ring. Real fancy, though. Asked me what it was worth.
What'd you tell him?
Worth $20, maybe $25.
Is that what you told him?
Now, you know I can't loan full value. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
I offered him $5. I would have gone up to 10 if he'd have pressed me. That's better than a lot of brokers would give.
Did he take the 5?
Are you kidding? He went all to pieces. Thought he was going to have a hemorrhage. Started calling me a crook. Said the ring was an emerald. Shouted, screamed all over the place. It's an emerald, he said. A $5,000 emerald. That hunk of glass.
Well, you sure you didn't make a mistake, Fred?
No, I ask you, Sergeant. Would anybody try to pawn a 5G emerald with me, I ask you?
Uh-huh.
Glass, that's what it was. Green glass. A nice setting, though.
What do you think, Joe? Well, the old diamond switch, maybe.
Could be.
Sounds like the only difference is the color. You get his name, Fred?
Yeah, I asked him. He just shouted and carried on, though. He wasn't making any sense at all. Got his license, though.
Oh?
Yeah, he's parked right in front of the place. Got the number when he drove off. Thought you might want it.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it out. Put it in my pocket. It should be right here. Now, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, here it is. The match folder on the inside. You make it out all right?
Yeah, I think so. We'll check it.
Uh-huh. Might be a good idea if you got right on it, huh?
What do you mean?
Well, just before he left my place, he stopped all that carrying on. I think it sunk in what I told him about the ring being no good.
Yeah.
Got real quiet, you know, kind of like he was making up his mind about something.
Yeah.
Asked me to sell him a gun.
Fred Alpin gave us a description of the man who had tried to pawn the ring. We called our branch of DMV and asked them to check the license number. They came up with the information that the automobile bearing that license was registered in the name of Garfield Hunt at 221 North Selma Avenue, Hollywood. 9:03 a.m. Frank and I drove out to talk to him.
Boy, it sure is a clear day. Look at those hills, Joe.
Well, I read in the paper you can see for 40 miles.
Yeah, I bet.
Morning.
Who are you? What do you want?
Is Mr. Hunt here?
No. No, he's not here.
Well, he lives here, doesn't he?
Who are you?
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. We're police officers.
Police?
That's right. This is my partner, Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Where is he? What's happened to him?
Mind if we come inside? It'd be a little easier to talk.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, I forgot. Sofa's still made up. Slept down here last night, so I'd be near the phone. Thought he might call. Thought somebody'd call.
Your husband didn't come home.
Never happened before. Not in 37 years.
Yes, ma'am.
Just let me fold up that blanket so
here,
you can
I'll
sit
give
down.
You a hand, ma'am.
Oh, thank you.
You got any idea where your husband might have gone, Ms. Hunt?
No. No idea at all.
What time did he leave?
9:35. Looked at the clock as he went out the door. Couldn't believe it. Not like Gar to go out that late. We're usually in bed by 10.
Yes, ma'am.
He promised me he'd only be gone now. Promised me he'd be back by 10:30 for sure.
I see.
Never heard a word from him after that, not a word. What do you suppose happened to him?
We're sorry we don't know, Ms. Hunt.
Well, you must have some notion.
Sorry we don't.
You said you wanted to talk to him.
Just a few questions, routine.
What about?
Well, we'd rather talk to him. You notify the police that he's missing?
No, I didn't know what to do. Figured you'd get in touch with me when you found him. Guess I wasn't thinking very good. Never happened before.
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any friends he might be staying with, relatives?
We don't know anybody else from Los Angeles.
I see.
Just moved out here last winter from Kansas. Children have grown up, settled. Gar sold the business. We moved out here. Kansas winters can be pretty cold.
Yes, ma'am. Is your husband retired?
Well, he should be. Worked hard all his life. He deserves a rest. Had a little trouble with his heart last year. No, not a real attack. But the doctor told him to take it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Not Gar, though. Wasn't out here 2 months before he got all restless and fidgety. Just couldn't take it sitting around the house. Started up again.
In business?
Yes, sir. We had a tailor shop back in Kansas. Gar found a new business district opening up in the San Fernando Valley off of Magnolia Boulevard. They were renting cheap, you know, right at the beginning, wanted tenants.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do much business at first, but things have been getting better. Gar's a good tailor. A lot more careful than most. Learned his trade young. The days when there were tailors.
Yes, ma'am. You try to reach him there at the shop?
I called last night 3-4 times. This morning, too. Nobody answered.
I see.
You think you can find him?
We'll do our best.
I guess maybe I should have notified you last night.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't know what to do. Thought you'd get in touch with me if something happened.
Well, better to call us first.
Yeah, I guess so.
Then it might not happen. Mrs. Hunt gave us a description of her husband. We advised her to make a formal report at the Valley Division. A local and an APB were sent out. 3:15 p.m. Patrol car unit 9L78 reported Hunt had been found sitting in his car. The car was parked on Mulholland Drive. Hunt had readily identified himself. We asked the officers to bring him in for questioning.
Hi, Joe. Frank.
Pete.
Hi, Pete.
Here he is.
Thanks for spotting him for us.
Sure, anytime.
Want to sit down, Hunt? Go ahead, sit down.
What do you want with me?
Just like to talk to you, that's all. This is Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
I've never been under arrest before, not once.
Well, now you're not under arrest now, Mr. Hunt.
What am I doing here? Why did those officers make me come with them?
Well, you didn't go home last night. Your wife's been worried about you.
Well, I was going home when they found me. Wasn't any place else to go. Sarah oughtn't to have called.
She didn't call, sir.
Well, how'd you find out?
You tried to buy a gun. Pawn shop over on Main Street.
Oh.
Well, what'd you want the gun for?
I wouldn't have hurt him. I just wanted my money back. I thought I could scare him. That's all. I don't know nothing about firearms. Thought maybe I could scare him.
Who'd you want to scare now? Who were they?
Well, they said they was renting a store next to mine. Said they was jewelers. That opened up a Valley branch for Lassingwell's. You know, the big jewelry store downtown here?
Uh-huh.
Crooks. That's what they were. Out and out crooks. Went looking for them early this morning. Back door to their store was open, you know, the one next to mine.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I couldn't find hide nor hair of them. The place was empty. Just a couple of fakes. Had the windows soaped over so nobody could see what they were up to. Pounding on some old boards, making me think that they was remodeling.
Uh-huh. How much money did they get from you?
Not them exactly. Fellow working with them. Must have been working with them. Only way it makes sense.
Well, now, suppose you tell us about it, will you?
He come into my shop day before yesterday, over along about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Called himself Norman Crist. He said he was from Greeley.
Greeley?
That's a town in Colorado where my brother lives.
Mm-hmm.
Said he knew my brother Ed back there.
What did he want with you?
Well, he claimed that Ed asked him to look me up, see how I was doing. Probably didn't know Ed at all. They must have told him, them jeweler fellas.
Uh-huh.
Ah, got to thinking back. Remembered I mentioned having a brother in Colorado one day when we was having lunch. Told him the town, too, really.
What happened then? Did he sell you the ring?
Oh, you know about that, too.
Well, you tried to pawn it, didn't you?
No, sir, not really. I just wanted to find out how much it was worth so that I could tell Sarah, you know, I was going to surprise her. Figured that I'd give him another day before I tried to sell it.
Well, how'd you happen to buy it?
Oh, I wasn't buying it outright. I was just loaning him on it.
Mm-hmm.
Told me he had a chance to option some property out near Encino. Real bargain. Said he had to close the deal by 5 p.m. that same day. He needed cash for a clincher.
Mm-hmm.
Had to get the money from Colorado. That's what he said. He was afraid he wouldn't be here in time. He couldn't go to the bank. Didn't have any credit in L.A.
Uh-huh.
Needed $3,000. He said that if I'd loan him a three, he'd give me back $4,000 first thing the next morning. Offered me his ring for security. He said it was worth $7,000 easy. Said it cost him more than that.
You hand the money over?
No, sir. Not by a darn sight. Told him I didn't have $3,000. I told him straight out.
Uh-huh.
Said all I had was $1,500 in my savings account. I guess I shouldn't have said that.
Very nuts, sir.
He told me he might be able to swing it for $1,500. He'd have to go out there and see him in person. Said he'd come back.
Did he leave then?
No, not right away. I stopped him. I told him there was no point in coming back. I'm no jewel, I said. How do I know that ring's worth $7,000? Told me to get it appraised while he was gone. Told me to take it to any jewel I wanted to. Seemed like he sure trusted me. Leaving a valuable ring like that. Kinda sold me on him.
Mm-hmm.
I went next door to ask those fellas who said they was jewelers. Place was locked up, so I figured they was still out for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I figured maybe they was in the drugstore down on the corner, you see.
Did you find them up there?
Yes, sir.
What'd they say about the ring?
Perfect emerald. That's what they said. One of them put a gadget up his eye, looked through it. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir, I know.
Perfect emerald worth $10,000. Not the flaw in it.
Mm-hmm.
Acted like they thought it was mine. Offered to buy if I wanted to sell. I told him about the other fellow. That he needed $3,000. I told them the whole story. I did.
Uh-huh.
They said they'd loan him $5,000 without batting an eye. Offered to make out a check right then and there. Kind of took my wind away. They were so anxious. I said maybe we could go in 50-50. They put up $1,500. I'd put up $1,500. That way the guy would have $3,000 if he still needed that much. We could both make a little profit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of them asked me how I wanted the check. Should make it out to me. I told him, oh, make it out to cash.
You remember how he signed it?
Jones. Quincy Jones. That's the name I knew him by. Other one called himself Wyatt Truesdale. I don't think that's their real name. Do you? Probably one of those, what did you call them?
Aliases.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's it. Well, anyway, I went over to my bank and drew out the $1,500. About 2:30, the fellow came back. The one who gave me the ring.
Yeah.
Said he tried to talk the real estate people into being satisfied with $1,500. Wouldn't come down. Insisted on the whole $3,000. I told him not to worry, that I had it. Give him my $1,500 and the check. He said the check would be okay, seeing as how it was on a local bank. He promised that he'd pay me back the next morning.
That'd be yesterday.
Yes, sir. And when he didn't show up, I wanted to make sure just how much it was worth, the ring.
Mm-hmm.
In case something had happened to it. In case he didn't come back for it. That's why I went to the pawn shop.
Mm-hmm.
Offered me $5 for it. The man in the pawn shop. Couldn't believe him at first. Said it was just glass, hunk of glass. Then a great light broke on me. How I'd been tricked. All of a sudden it comes.
Well, why'd you stay out all night? Why didn't you go home?
Well, you see, sir, I couldn't face her, Sarah. I knew I'd been swindled. $1,500. Every cent that we'd saved. Been married 37 years. It was Sarah's money, too. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Not just because she's my wife. To help earn it.
Well, we'll try and get it back for you, Mr. Hunt.
Not much to show for 37 years, is it? That's what I kept thinking while I was sitting in my car up there in the hills. All day long, just kept thinking. 37 years. $1,500. I'll have to tell her, won't I?
Well, sir, I think that's up to you.
She'll know it anyway. She'll know something's wrong.
Yes, sir.
Too late to start all over. We won't have them. There's not a chance.
Have what, sir?
Another 37 years.
We continued to interview the victim, Garfield Hunt, and he gave us descriptions of the three suspects. The stats office came up with 24 possibles. We showed the mug books to Hunt. He identified two of the photographs, Ernest Wilcoxon and Paul Cleaver. Hunt was positive that Wilcoxon and Cleaver were the men who had rented the store next to his and had pretended to be jewelers. He was unable to find a photograph of Norman Crist, the man who had sold him the ring. We pulled the packages on Wilcoxon and Cleaver. They'd both done time for burglary. They had not previously worked with a third person. We called the Lassingwell Jewelry Company. They informed us that they were not opening a branch out in the valley. We checked with the owners of the building in which Hunt had his tailor shop. They told us the adjacent store had been rented on a weekly basis and that the renters had said they intended to use the space for temporary storage. A local and an APB were sent out on all three suspects. 5:13 p.m. Using the information from their mama sheets, Frank and I began checking various places where Cleaver and Wilcoxon had been known to hang out. 7:12 p.m. We went into the Black Parrot Bar on South Broadway and we talked to the bartender.
Not by them names, I don't know.
Well, maybe these pictures will help.
How about it?
Yeah, they come in here once in a while.
Yeah, that's what we heard.
Always come in together?
As far as I know.
Ever bring somebody with him? Tall, thin fellow, about 30, blonde hair?
No, just two of them. Never seen him with another guy.
I see.
What do you want him for?
You know how we can turn him up?
We ain't here now.
Well, we can wait.
Won't be in tonight.
How do you know?
They got money.
Well?
Big roll. The red-headed one was in yesterday. Quincy Jones. That's what he told me his name was.
Yeah.
Been running a tab. He paid it up in full. I had plenty left over.
Is that right?
As long as they're carrying a roll, they don't come to my place. Head for them expensive joints, like out on the strip, you know, places like that. When they've blown their loot, they come back to me and start running up another tab. I called them on it, but what can you do? This is where I get some of their bundles.
Uh-huh. You know where they live?
Around here somewheres. I couldn't pin it down for you.
Who could?
How bad you want to find out?
What do you mean?
It'll cost you a drink.
You that thirsty?
Oh, not for me. The girl over there in the corner booth, the blonde.
Oh, yeah.
She knows him. Been out with him a couple of times. I've seen them leave together.
All right.
I'm just kidding about that drink. It's on the house for you guys and her, too.
No, we don't want anything.
And we'll pay for hers.
It's up to you.
Hi.
Good evening, miss.
You're new, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Place could stand some new talent. Here, I'll move over.
Thanks. Thank you.
What's the matter with this side?
We're police officers.
How do you like that?
Ma'am?
Orsco said I was going to meet somebody new today. You know, in the morning paper.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't say there'd be cops.
Oh, here you are, Peg.
Where'd that come from?
These guys.
You shouldn't call them guys, Jake. Fellow buys a lady a drink, that makes him a gentleman. From these gentlemen, that's what you should say.
Oh, sure.
To your very good health, gentlemen. Now then, what can I do for you? I'm at your service.
The bartender says these guys are friends of yours.
I wouldn't say those pictures do him justice, but there is a resemblance.
You know him, then?
We've met. We weren't formally introduced, but we've met. Meet a lot of people in here. Not the best people in town, maybe. It's not the best bar in town, but it's convenient. I work down the street.
Uh-huh. You know where these men live?
Huh? Oh, you mean these two so-called friends of mine?
Yeah.
Am I?
Well.
Did you ever hear of the North Cross Arms Hotel?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't been there with them, of course. I'm not sure that's their residence, but Quincy was carrying a hotel key, and one night it fell out of his pocket. I think that was the name on the tag, Norcross Arms.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the brandy.
Don't mention it. Mike, what do we owe you?
Six bits. She drinks good stuff.
There you go. Keep the change.
Looks like I got one decent break.
That's so?
Been paying their tab today before you pick them up.
No, they didn't pay it.
Huh? Who did?
A man named Hunt. The clerk at the North Cross Arms Hotel told us that two men who resembled Wilcoxon and Cleaver were registered under the names of Jones and Truesdale. He said they'd gone out for the evening. He showed us up to their room, 36A. We asked him about the suspect known as Norman Crist. He told us he'd never seen anybody with Wilcoxon and Cleaver who answered Crist's description. 2:48 a.m., Wilcoxon and Cleaver returned to their room. We took him into custody and drove him down to the city hall for questioning.
How many times you want to hear?
Until we get the truth.
Does Hunt say he gave us any money? He never gave us a cent, did he, Ernie?
No, we even paid his lunch tab a couple of times.
Right, always managed to outfumble us. Owes us a couple of lunches.
He paid him back.
What?
$1,500 buys a lot of lunches.
What $1,500?
You got your share. You've been spending all over town.
Hunt say he gave it to us?
He still had over $600 when we picked you up. Now, where'd it come from?
Hollywood Park. Picked three long shots yesterday. You want the names of the horses?
Where's Crist?
Told you before, never heard of him. Who is he?
The guy you worked the game with.
Never heard of him.
You want to take this rap yourself?
What rap?
Why'd you rent that store out in the valley?
Store?
We showed him your mugshots, the man you rented it from. He made you. You want it in person? How about it?
Guess they got us there, Ernie.
Yeah.
We were going to open up a bookie joint.
Is that right?
Yeah, we changed our minds, looked the situation over, decided it might get a little warm out in the valley and cleared out.
Bookie joint, huh?
That's right.
Not a jewelry store.
What are you talking about? Us jewelers, Ernie and me?
That's what you told Hunt.
Nothing of the kind. Laid it on the line. Told him we were bookies. Just between us, he was kind of pleased about it. Likes to play the horses himself. Like the idea of being able to lay a bet so convenient.
You're a liar.
Now, look. Say, maybe that's what happened to his money. Maybe he lost it on a nag.
Come on, let's try it again. Now, why'd you rent the store?
You're going to get the same answers. Same questions, same answers. It's a waste of time.
We got plenty.
72 hours, that's all you got. You can hold us on suspicion for 72, then you can turn us loose unless you prove something.
We'll prove it.
How? We didn't take any money from Hunt. Nobody says we did, even him. If he was a mark for this, what's his name, Chris?
That's right.
How do you wrap us into the package? Hunt never saw us with him. Nobody saw us with
him. We'll find somebody.
72 hours, then you got to turn us loose. That's the law.
Is that right?
We know the law.
Why'd you break it? We continued to question the suspects, but we were unable to break them down. Thursday, May 19th, 7:45 a.m. Another team of detectives took over the interrogation. Frank and I went back to the office.
You think they'll cop out, Joe?
I don't know. It doesn't look like it, does it?
No. Not unless we turn up Chris.
Did you call your wife?
Yeah, sure bawled me out. Kept dinner waiting till after 10. You're lucky.
Well, maybe.
Wonder if I'll get home tonight.
I got it. Bunko fugitive, Friday. Yeah, that's right. Sounds like him. How long ago? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Chris?
Fits the description. Smashed up a car on the Hollywood Freeway. Georgia Street recognized him from our teletype.
You able to talk?
died 10 minutes after they brought him in. At the morgue, the victim, Garfield Hunt, identified the body. He was positive it was Norman Crist, the man who had sold him the ring. Wilcoxon and Cleaver were also shown the body. They denied that they'd ever seen Crist before. The next day, Friday, May 20th, the evidence against Wilcoxon and Cleaver was taken to the district attorney's office. A complaint was refused. The evidence was deemed insufficient to bring the matter to trial at this time. Wilcoxon and Cleaver were released. 6.05 p.m., Frank and I got ready to sign out.
Well, that really tears it.
Sure does.
The DA's office knows they're guilty. We know it and can't do a thing.
Yep.
I guess we've been wasting our time, Joe, just fanning the ball.
Well, I'll tell you, we've spotted them and they're going to stay spotted.
Yeah.
Next time they move in on a mark, we'll make it stick.
It wouldn't be very smart of them to try it twice.
They're not smart.
Huh?
They tried it once.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
2 months later, on July 12th, Wilcoxon and Cleaver were apprehended for a similar crime. They were charged with one count grand theft. On November 6th, trial was held in Department 98, Superior Court, State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Ernest E. Wilcoxon and Paul Cleaver were found guilty of one count grand theft and were sentenced to a term prescribed by law. Grand theft is punishable by imprisonment in the county jail for a period of not less than 1 year, or for a period of from 1 to 10 years in the state penitentiary.
Dragnet, Untuned to Yesterday from February 8, 1955 on NBC. That was an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast featuring star Jack Webb. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.